have been and are, in my knowledge, some of the most generous folks I know. And I've been blown away by the generosity of this church already. And it's inspiring. It's a godly trait, and it's not a trait that comes from the devil, the idea of generosity. And I just want to bless y'all for that. I see y'all giving your time, your money, and your talents. And that comes harder for some of us to do than others. Some of us have to work on that giving muscle and that generosity muscle. So why am I preaching a message on wanting to receive or wanting to receive something for nothing? Well, honestly, it's probably because I see the need in my own life. And I'll tell you a couple of those incidences as we go on. The trap I found myself in recently of desiring to receive something for nothing. And is that a good trait? Is that a healthy trait? Is that something we as Christians should enjoy? And you may think, as we go through here, that I'm against getting a bargain at a store or finding a deal on something. That's not the heart of the message. I get just as much desire, joy out of walking the sale aisle at Home Depot or going pawn shopping or whatever it is and finding a bargain. I don't think there's anything wrong with some of that stuff. So don't take it as I'm just telling you that you have to constantly pay full price for everything. And you follow what I'm saying? That's not where I'm going with this. I'm just trying to get us to think about some of this stuff and make myself think about some of this stuff. Sometimes us Dutch folk and Jews and Christians as a whole sometimes get a bad rap for being tightwads. And it bothers me a little bit sometimes. They say that the shift, I know we don't promote necessarily going out to eat on Sundays around here, but they say the shift that none of the waitresses want to work is the lunch shift on Sundays, because that's when all the Christians come in, and Christians are notoriously tightwads and they don't tip very much. That's kind of sad. And sometimes these, what do you call it, cliche thoughts, they're not always true, but sometimes they hold a little more of an element of truth than I care to admit. Like I say, they're obviously not always true, and true all the way across the board, but sometimes there's maybe more truth in it than I like to see. I see some of that in my own life. So lest we confuse the thought of frugal and tightwad, I don't want to confuse those two thoughts. Have any of y'all ever heard of a lady called Hetty Green? If you've heard of her or not, but she had a not-so-nice nickname that I won't bother mentioning up here. She was born in the mid-1800s, November 22nd, 1834, and she died November 16th. She was born to a well-to-do family, and she died with a fortune of between $100 and $200 million in 1916. So she was a very, very wealthy lady. They say in today's dollars it was somewhere between $3 and $5 billion. Very, very wealthy lady for back then. Even in today's time, she would have been very wealthy. But she was a Grinch with her money, if you want to call her that. Her cheapness made her a legend. She would not turn on her hot water. They say she would not have heat in her house or use hot water. She wouldn't wash her hands because she didn't want to buy the soap. She always rode in a carriage, an old, dilapidated carriage. She ate mostly pies that would only cost 15 cents each, and she instructed the lady that washed her clothing to wash only the hem, because she didn't want to spend money on soap for washing the whole dress. Her son had to suffer a leg amputation because he got an infection, and she spent so long looking for a free clinic for his care that they actually had to amputate his leg. She spent one night looking through her carriage the whole night for a lost stamp that cost 2 cents. She got married in 1867, only after making her soon-to-be husband renounce all rights to her money. And surprise of surprise, the marriage did not work out. That is the definition of a tightwad. It's really a sad story because she had so much potential. She had the knack for making and investing money. She was not a stupid lady by any means, but she let her desire and her want for things and hoarding drive her to what we would call an insane place today. She did have moments, they say. This information comes off Wikipedia, so I didn't research too much of it, but she did have moments where she was generous with her money, but they were few and far in between. It was not a habit that she built in her life. She was a miserable tightwad, and that's the way she died. The other side of that is, we hear people sometimes, I've heard the comment, and it's equally as sad, is that I hope right before I fall over into my grave, I spend my last nickel. That's the other side of it. That is also just as equally broken in my mind as being the other way. So somehow it seems like we have to find moderation in here. That old favorite Dutch word of mine called maatschappelijkheid. Where do we find moderation in here? How do we steer our lives to where we avoid these ditches? Thank you, Brian. I don't know what that is. Do I need to do anything with it? Okay. We're going to look at a man in Joshua. We all know this man well, but we're going to read his story again, Joshua 7. Joshua 7, we'll read 16. This is a story about Achan. So why would I bring a story about Achan into a story about wanting something for nothing? Let's read this story once. Joshua 7, we'll start reading in verse 16. So Joshua rose up early in the morning and brought Israel by their tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And he brought the family of Judah, and he took the family of the Zerahites and brought the family of the Zerahites man by man, and Zebdi was taken. And he brought his household man by man, and Achan the son of Carmi, the son of Zebdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah was taken. And Joshua said unto Achan, My son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Lord God of Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done, and hide it not from me. And Achan answered Joshua and said, Indeed, I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and thus have I done. And when I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment, and 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold, a 50 shekels of weight, then I coveted them, and took them. And behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran unto the tent. And behold, it was hid in his tent, and the silver under it. And they took them out of the midst of the tent, and brought them unto Joshua, unto all the children of Israel, and laid them out before the Lord. And Joshua and all of Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had, and they brought them to the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, Why hast thou troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee this day. And all of Israel stoned him with stones, burned him with fire after they stoned him with stones. And they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. So the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger. Wherefore the name of the place is called the Valley of Achor unto this day. It's a really sad story that we have here. And it's a story, I remember going to Sunday school as a young boy and hearing this story. I've been used to listening to this story all my life. So for a little background, this was right after they came through the Jericho experience, and all of Israel was on a mountaintop experience. It was a good time for them. And they had this little pain of a city called Ai. And it wasn't a very big city, and it wasn't worthwhile to gather up all the army and go up there and take care of the city. So they talked about it and decided to send just 3,000 men up there and figured that'd be more than enough to take care of this problem. And of all embarrassing things, they got sent home running, and 36 of them got killed. Right after a Jericho experience. God told Joshua very plainly in verse 14 and 15, I didn't read those, but he told them very plainly that there was sin in the camp. No, I take that back. 14 and God told him very plainly that there was sin that needed to be dealt with, and then in 14 and 15 gave him instructions on how to find the man that did it. It seems they used some type of a lot system. And I had to wonder on that a little bit. It seemed like Joshua was really good at listening to God, and God was really good at talking to Joshua. Why didn't God just say it was Achan, go get him? But he didn't. He used the lot experience. I wondered if it was, I don't know why I did that, but I wonder if it was to give Achan knew, I don't know if he knew what he knew, but it gave Achan a chance to watch the steps coming of his conviction little bit by little bit. And I want to note too that God didn't pick Achan out for punishment. Achan picked himself out when he went and got that gold in Jericho. God wasn't picking on him as such. He chose for himself that this was the lot that he put himself into. Sometimes I feel myself like God's getting hard on, why are you getting hard on me, God, for whatever? And if you stop and think about it, a lot of times it's steps I took myself that got me in the bind I'm in. Not always. We have examples like Job. But sometimes it's maybe more my fault than I like to admit. Just something to throw in there. Anyway, so they started doing this lot thing. And of all things, the tribe of Judah was picked. The tribe of Judah, the tribe that was supposed to be the most honorable, the most noble. Here they are, and it's somebody in that tribe. Now, if you put yourself in Achan's shoes, in the midst of all these people, what's the chance that they're going to find me? I don't know if that's what he was thinking or not, but if I was in his shoes, why not take you? The right thing to do would have been make it right, but if in his line of thinking, he might have been thinking, what's the chance they're going to pick me out? And then, lo and behold, his tribe gets picked out of the others. I got a feeling all of a sudden there's a little bit of a pit in his stomach. Like, maybe I'm going to be found out. But he didn't say anything. And they continued picking. And his grandpa's family got picked. And he sees it coming closer and closer. And then his dad's family gets picked. And he keeps thinking, I was pretty good at hiding my tracks. Maybe this lot thing's not going to work after all. But we see in verse 18, it did not take long, and Achan was picked. And can you imagine the horror, the feeling that went through his mind, his body, when he seen Joshua standing there with eyes that looked like he could see straight through you? Poor Achan. And we see Joshua being almost fatherly kind to him. Joshua had every right to chew Achan out, like chew him down to a shred. You killed 36 of our men and their families are going to be grieving. You caused embarrassment and a mess for us Israelites. But we don't see Joshua doing that. We see Joshua very kindly saying, he calls him son, and he gently asks him what he did. And verse 20, Achan lays it all out what he did. And can you imagine as Achan's laying this out, the sin that he did in the camp, the horror that's going through the poor man? This was in the days before Jesus. This was still eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth days. He likely knew what was coming, and he likely knew it wasn't going to be very good. And I had to wonder, too, what was his thought process in taking clothing and money? It said it was a goodly Babylonish garment. It was probably a very nice article of clothing. But what was he going to actually do with that? Could he wear that in camp? Seriously? You don't think anybody's going to see that and wonder where you got that? And the money? A close-knit camp? I mean, he starts rolling around in a new, shiny new chariot. Probably somebody's going to wonder where he got the money. It seems like sin has a way of trapping us in more ways than one. Did you ever notice that? It's just the way it seems to work. And it seems a bit, in my human mind, it can almost seem overboard that God allowed the destruction of not only Achan, but his entire family. All of his possessions, all of his sons and his daughters. But that was how it was back in those days. And I'm not, that's the way God decided it was going to be, and God had his reasons for it. Obviously, God was very serious. He wanted his commandments obeyed. There was no doubt about that. And second of all, if obviously probably his family was in on the deal too. How can you dig a massive hole in the center of your tent and not your family not be in on it and know what was going on? They could have, the right thing to do would have been to go tell the leaders what had happened, but apparently they kept their mouth shut on the deal, and it got them stoned too. So the sin of Achan was covetousness. He admitted it himself. He said, I coveted. In verse 21, we see that. And it seems like, in my mind, out of this covetousness, there's a root in there, and it's a thing of wanting something for nothing. Something that is the easy way out. Something where I don't have to work. I can just take and be a receiver. And that, I'm here to tell you, is not a godly trait. And too often I find myself in that boat. I want something for nothing. I want the easy way out. Can you call it laziness? Maybe slight, maybe a little bit. But at the same time, I thought about it. Am I a lazy person? I think us as humans are kind of, we are kind of naturally lazy. If I go to cut wood a mile from the house, guess what? I'm not going to go push it home in a wheelbarrow when I have a truck and a trailer sitting there. So now, am I lazy? I don't know. In a way, I maybe am, but somehow I have to balance all this out in my mind. But I think I finally came to the conclusion that if I think I have to have every single little gadget to make my life easier, and I get those, and I have to have everything, no matter how I get it, at the expense of others, I think that's where the problem lies. This line of thinking can get me going down the path of wanting everything as cheap, as easy as I can, with no matter at the expense of others. And like I said at the beginning, I don't have a problem with going to an auction and getting a bargain. I don't have a problem with picking up something somebody wants to get rid of cheap because they want it out of their yard. But the drive, if I am so driven in my mind that I can never pay fair market price for something, I think I do good to stop and consider that a little bit. I noticed in the news the other day that we have this Powerball lottery thing building up again. I don't know if y'all seen that again, but it seems like every now and then we get to, I don't know how that whole system works, and I don't really care to know, but I do know there's a lot of greed and desire for that. What was it? Up to a billion or something? I don't even remember what it was, but it's a massive amount of money, and the amount of people that are trying to get that is kind of ridiculous. And I know we don't have that problem of us, we don't really struggle with that in our circles of buying lottery tickets. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. I've never bought one and I never intend to, but the idea of being able to spend a couple of bucks or $100, I don't know what the ticket costs, and get a whole bunch of something for almost nothing, that's a very attractive thing to us as humans. And it's, have you ever noticed the statistics of the people that get those things? It's not very good. It wrecks their lives. They say you actually have more chance of being struck by lightning and surviving or being winning the president of the United States seat than you do of winning the Powerball lottery. I don't know if that's all true or not, but it's obviously a very rare chance, and the amount of people that put their hope in getting that is kind of ridiculous. So I can kind of look at all that and I scoff a little bit. And I say, why would you put your hope in something like that? What's the point? But if I'm really honest, deep down inside of me, there's a little piece of that. And let me give you an example. There was the gas station there beside where I work. I go in and out of there all the time. And recently I was in there, and the lady behind the cash register asked if I wanted to buy a raffle ticket for her daughter was putting on at school for a deer blind they were giving away. You can buy one ticket for $1 or two for, or four for $2, however it was. And I didn't think much about it. I had a couple of dollars and I bought a ticket or two and I walked out the door. And the more I got to thinking about it later, I was like, you know, it would be really nice to have that deer blind. It'd be really nice if I could win that and take it over to the farm and set it up. And it's almost shameful, the spirit that it woke up inside of me. The chance of me actually winning that thing was quite greater than winning the Powerball, but it was still a very small chance. And it's almost embarrassing that I was actually having the hope that I could win this thing. Now, I don't know what y'all think about raffle tickets. I know there's lots of different opinions on all that. Some people view it as a lottery. I don't really view a raffle ticket as such. But I will say this. It woke up something in me that I don't feel was very healthy. And I'll just throw this out there. If I'm buying a raffle ticket from now on, I think I better be doing it with the idea that I'm helping an organization I believe in, and I want to help that organization, and if I would donate to that organization anyway, maybe I'm fine with buying a raffle ticket. But if something inside me wakes up and I have a desire to win that item, it's probably not a good idea for me to buy the ticket. Like I say, I don't think they're evil, and I don't think companies are out of place, really, for putting them on. But if I get all enamored with that, it can carry me places pretty quick that it's not good for a Christian to go. Just something to think about. Let me tell you another thing. What about businesses that give things away for free? The bank there was giving away a free grill over the Watermelon Festival, and they're like, drop your name in the hat, maybe you'll win it. Well, I could use a new grill. That'd be great if I could get a new grill. I'd love it. It kind of wakes up a little bit of the same spirit deep down inside of me, whether I want to admit it or not. Now, I would probably put my name in the hat again. I'm not saying it's, if a business is going to give something like that away, I think it's to bless the community or whatever, that's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't put your name in the hat. But don't let it wake up that spirit of getting that something for nothing inside of you. I remember as a boy we raised chicken for Townsend's. And one of the highlights of that was once a year they put on a supper for all the chicken growers and they served fish or whatever. And then in my little 9, 10, 12-year-old mind, they had a huge pile of door prizes that they gave away. And that was so much fun as a young boy to go to those places and maybe you could win something. And a lot, I did win something a few times. They had a bunch there. A lot of people actually won stuff. But looking back in hindsight, it was probably actually more character building and better for me to go to those places and not get something and go home without it and face the disappointment. It was really hard on you if your sibling won and you got home with nothing and they had something. But I'm just saying, The idea of free stuff and winning something that's no cost to you is very seductive. And I think we need to be careful with that. Something else I'd like to bring in here is dictating the generosity of others. Have you ever seen a need and you felt like you should donate to a need or give to a need, and in your mind, you know other people know about this need, and you know some of your friends are better off than what you are, it's easy to start thinking in my mind, you know what? Why can't they just take care of this need? Why don't let the rich pay for it? Let the others that are better off than me donate and fix this need. All I'm doing when I do that is putting myself in the position of judge, and in that position, I deem myself the authority to take what God gave another man and donate it away. And there's really no pain in that for me. There's no generosity in that for me. And I think that comes from an unhealthy place that stems back to the same thing I was talking about. It's easy to give away other people's things when it don't affect me. And maybe if I'm honest with myself, maybe God gave the other man or woman, whoever it is, more resources because they're a better manager than I am. So why do I get to dictate when they should or shouldn't give? Something to think about. Proverbs 21:25. Solomon had kind of an interesting, bold way of putting things. The desire of a slothful man killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. Wow, that's pretty straightforward. What about 21 and then going on to verse 26, he says, he coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. Proverbs 19:15, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and the idle soul shall suffer hunger. And then going back to the New Testament, just share this one verse with you, Hebrews 13:5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. God's telling us in that verse that he has promised he's with us. And we don't really have any right to look around and covet another man's possessions, things, talents. We don't have that right. God's going to take care of us, and we need to focus on the blessings he's already given us. The last part of this, The something for nothing every born-again Christian has gotten. Those of us who are Christians here this morning, we have received a gift that was basically for nothing. And y'all know what I'm talking about. It was the gift that God gave through his son, Jesus Christ. Romans 6:23, for the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. As a Christian, me and you, we were given an incredible gift that cost us basically nothing. And I say basically nothing because it does cost us in the fact that we have to live our lives for him to receive this gift. God's there and he gave the gift. Well, Joe preached about grace, was it last Sunday? God gave this gift of grace and eternal life with him. All we have to do is receive it and believe in him. At the same time, it's not really, it's a completely free gift that we have to receive, but it does cost us something. It cost us our life and living a life of living for him. But it's almost like it didn't cost us anything if you stop and think about the eternity that we're headed towards. This small bit of life that we have to live for him is virtually nothing compared to what he has done for us. It doesn't mean that I don't struggle with selfish desires and wants, but it does mean that I have to stop and think about it, how in the scope of eternity, living a life for Christ is, it's almost like it cost us nothing. Does that make sense? Maybe that's not worded quite right, but that's the best I can think of to. That's the best way I can explain it that it makes sense to me. There was a man, but I don't know this man very well. I stumbled across one of his articles in studying for this. Harold, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Sala. And he was writing an article about this thing of wanting something for nothing. And this idea of us as humans sometimes think we can get something from God just because we demand it. And he pointed out a song, I don't know this song, but he said he pointed out a Christian song out there that says, "Ask and it shall be given. Seek and ye shall find, for faith and prayer put God to work for you." There's so much wrong in that little saying there. If we believe that, it kind of puts God in the position of a, how did he word it? It puts God in the position of being a divine office boy and us with some kind of using prayer to pull the strings. That is not how it works, my friends. That is not how it works. And he tells the story of a lady that came to him in tears asking for prayers for her husband and her son. And she said, her words were, "God just has to reach down and help me." And he asked her, he said, "Ma'am, are you a Christian that's living your life for him?" And she said, "No, I'm not." And he was struck that this lady was thinking we can just ask no matter if we're living for God or not, and God is obligated to answer our prayers. He's obligated to help us out of whatever pinch we're in. That's not how it works, friends. Y'all know that. So while the gift of God is free, and while we pay almost nothing for it, we still have to reach out and accept it and live our life for him. Does that make sense? Is it clear? God isn't obligated to give us everything we want, but he does promise to give us everything we need, and we need to be content with what he calls a need. That's all I have for the message this morning. Thanks for your attention. Thanks for listening. Why don't we kneel for prayer?